Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're starting an exploration into, well, one of the most fundamental ways we piece together how history happened, how societies worked. We're talking about archival research.
Yeah, it's all about getting your hands dirty, metaphorically speaking, with the original stuff.
Mm.
The primary sources held in archives, special collections, you know, the actual letters, documents, photos, maybe even old computer files.
And it's so important to stress, these aren't just like dusty old papers someone collected randomly. They are the actual raw material.
Exactly. They're the direct evidence. The first-hand accounts or things created at the time something was happening.
Right. Untouched by later spin or interpretation.
Which gives you this incredible shortcut, almost, to understanding what people were really thinking or doing back then.
So our goal here is to really unpack this world for you. What archives actually are, where you might find them, how you even start navigating them.
And crucially, how to make sense of what you find inside. Because it's a journey. One source called it tedious, yet exciting, surprising, partly grueling.
Huh. I can believe that. Tedious but exciting sounds about right for research sometimes.
Definitely. And there's this core idea from archival science. The French call it archivistique. That's really key.
Okay.
It sees archival information as being fixed in a document specifically because that document supports an identified activity. It served a purpose when it was created.
Ah, so it's not just random information floating around like in a library book. Its existence is tied to an action, a function.
Precisely. It had a job to do for the person or organization that created it.
And that ties into this other term I saw in the notes. Provenance.
Yes, absolutely essential. Provenance is all about the origin. Who created the record? Why did they create it? When?
Understanding that creator and their purpose is fundamental to interpreting the document itself.
Right. You can't really understand the document without it. It shapes everything.
So, putting that together, an archive isn't just a pile of stuff. It's a collection of evidence that's structured, maybe intentionally, maybe not, around the functions and activities of its creators.
Exactly. And that structure, that provenance, tells you a lot about what's likely in the archive and maybe what's missing. It has inherent biases because of who created it and why.
Which is why this kind of research is so valuable. It sheds light on the past, helps you examine the real context,
and helps us understand, as one source put it, how we got where we are today.
And I was really struck by the idea that this can even be about people power. Using archives, maybe even getting communities involved in the research.
Participatory research, yeah. Building knowledge for groups whose histories might have been ignored or erased. It can be a way to counter that erasure.
It shows archives aren't just for academics locked away somewhere. They can be active tools for understanding ourselves now.
Powerful point. Okay, so we've sort of laid the groundwork. We know these are unique activity-linked primary sources.
Yeah.
We know why they matter.
But the big practical question is, okay, where do you actually find these places? Where do you start looking?
Good question. Because archives aren't all the same. The sources point out there are different types, each with its own kind of mission and collection focus.
Right, like university archives. Those are pretty common.
Yeah, typically they hold records about the university's own history. Maybe papers from professors, sometimes special collections, too rare books, manuscripts donated by people, often related to what the university researches.
Then you've got corporate archives for businesses.
Right. Documenting the company's history, products, marketing, that kind of thing. Access there can really vary, though. Some are open, some are very private.
Government archives are probably the ones most people think of for, like, public records.
Definitely. These hold the official stuff, legislative records, court files, agency documents, places like NRR in the U.S. or the Bundesarchiv in Germany. Public access is generally pretty good for these.
And historical societies. More local, maybe?
Often, yeah. Focused on a specific region or a period or a theme. Very community-oriented sometimes.
Museums, too, right? They have artifacts, but also the paperwork behind them.
Exactly. Documentation about the objects, who owned them, related letters or photos, and religious archives for different faith groups and their institutions. Access varies there, too.
What's interesting, though, is that these aren't neat little boxes. A university might have a politician's papers. A historical society might have old local government records.
Absolutely. The lines can be blurry. You might need to think creatively about where records related to your topic could have ended up. Don't just look in the obvious place.
And the types of materials inside. Wow, it's not just paper.
Oh, not at all. The sources list a huge range. You've got the textual things, short letters, diaries, meeting minutes, financial ledgers.
But also visual stuff. Photos, maps, architectural drawings, films.
Audio recordings. Actual physical objects sometimes. Even published materials, like an old newspaper, can be a primary source depending on your question.
And data now too, right? Like spreadsheets, databases, geospatial info.
Yeah, and then there's ephemera. That's a fascinating category.
Ephemera. Like ticket stubs, brochures, flyers. Stuff people usually threw away, even old social media posts now, I guess.
Exactly. And their value, as the sources say, often comes from the sheer improbability that they survived. They're transient, unself-conscious.
Meaning they weren't made thinking about history. They were just for the moment.
Which can give you these amazing, unfiltered glimpses into everyday life, popular tastes, things that don't make it into the official record.
Okay, but hang on. With all these different places and all these different formats of stuff, how do you possibly find what you need? You can't just browse the shelves.
No, definitely not. That's where archivists come in and the tools they create, the most important one being the finding aid.
The roadmap, as the sources called it.
Precisely. It describes a collection. And within that finding aid, the scope and content note is usually your first stop.
That gives you the overview, like who created it, what's generally in it, the dates it covers.
Yeah, exactly. It summarizes the collection's territory.
Yeah.
But, and this is a crucial point, from the sources, it tells you what is there.
It doesn't tell you what isn't there.
Right. You have to bring your own knowledge to it and think critically.
Yeah.
Given who created this, what might be missing? What perspectives aren't represented?
That makes sense. You need the roadmap, but you also need to know how to read the landscape.
Oh, hold on. Is that? Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady's here. Rojbosh, Hannah.
Perfect timing. A little pause before we get into the nitty gritty of the research process.
Definitely need this.
Okay.
Okay, the big question. How's the chai today? Is it good? Sometimes it's a bit strong. Maybe needs a touch more sugar.
Let's see. Sound of sipping implied, huh, oh, that's lovely today. Really nicely spiced, good warmth. Sweetness feels just right to me.
Sound of sipping implied, oh, you're right. That is spot on. Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Refreshed. Thanks, right. Anna.
Much better. Ready to continue.
All right. So we know what archives are, generally where to find them, the kinds of materials. Now let's get practical. The actual research journey. The sources break it down into phases, right? Preparation, being in the archive, and then what happens after. Exactly. And phase one, the preparation, is absolutely critical. You don't just show up. It starts way before that with formulating your research questions.
You might start broad, but you need to refine them, make them specific, clear, and importantly, make sure they're actually answerable using archival sources.
Yeah. You have to think, what kind of evidence should exist for this question? Who would have created it? You need to sort of hypothesize.
But you also need to be flexible, right? The sources mention the archives speaking back.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. You might go in looking for one thing and stumble across something completely unexpected, but even more relevant. Your plan needs room to evolve.
Okay, so you have your questions, some hypotheses, then you actually have to find the right archives. How do you do that?
Well, there are online tools mentioned, like WorldCat, Archive Grid, national portals like the AROA catalog in the U.S., or Discovery in the U.K. Library guides, bibliographies, and books on your topic can also point you in the right direction.
But, and this seems important, not everything is online.
Crucially, no. Especially for smaller archives or older collections. Talking to experts, librarians, other researchers, traditional networking is still vital.
And once you think you've found a potential place.
Initial contact. Check their website first for access rules, opening hours, all that practical stuff. But then contact the archivist.
Talk to them. Tell them what you're working on.
Absolutely. They know their collections better than anyone. Yeah. They can be incredibly helpful, pointing you to things you'd never find on your own or advising you on how to approach your search. Just be aware that access isn't always guaranteed.
Right. Things might be restricted, too fragile maybe, or donor rules. Or just not processed yet.
Exactly. You might have to use microfilm copies or digitized versions or wait until the collection is processed. It happens.
Okay, so that's prep. Then phase two, you're actually in the archive. Discovery and documentation time.
And this is where you really dig into those finding aids we mentioned. You learn to read their structure. Usually it's hierarchical. Collection level, then maybe series, then box, folder, sometimes down to the individual item.
And the container list tells you which box or folder to ask for.
Precisely. And once you get that box, handling the materials, this is paramount.
Yeah, the sources really stress this. These things are unique, often fragile, clean hands.
Maybe gloves for photos or film, depending on the archive's rules. Use supports like book cradles or foam wedges. Work in the designated reading room, usually one box or folder at a time.
And the big NOs. No food, no drinks, anywhere near the materials.
Absolutely not. And be gentle. Don't slide things across each other. Don't grip too tightly. Don't force things open. Never fold brittle paper. If something seems really fragile, ask for help or see if there's a copy. And be careful with things that can smear, like charcoal drawings.
While you're carefully looking through things, note-taking is happening. This sounds like the bridge between just looking and actually analyzing later.
It is. And you need to be meticulous. Obsessively so, almost.
What do you need to record?
Everything. To find it again and cite it properly. The repository name, the collection name or number, the series, box, folder numbers, a description of the item, its date.
Content notes too, right? Summaries. Quotes verbatim if you plan to quote directly.
Yes. And URLs for digital items. But here's a key piece of advice from the sources. Get the full citation details for everything you look at.
Even stuff you don't think you'll use.
Especially stuff you don't think you'll use. Because you might change your mind later. Trying to reconstruct a citation for something you glanced at weeks ago is a nightmare. Far easier to record it all up front. Saves potential return trips.
Makes sense. What about taking pictures? Lots of people use their phones now.
Most archives allow non-flash photography for personal research notes these days. It's very convenient. But there's a really important catch.
Ah, let me guess. Taking a picture doesn't mean you own the copyright or can publish it.
Exactly that. Permission to photograph for your notes is completely separate from permission to publish or distribute that image. For publication, you usually need permission from the archive itself and from the copyright holder, who might be the creator's estate or a company, not the archive. Big difference.
That's a critical distinction. Okay, and transcription. Typing out handwritten documents.
Yeah, that can be time-consuming but really valuable, especially for difficult handwriting. It makes the text searchable, easier to quote accurately, and more accessible for others, perhaps using screen readers.
There are tips for that too, right? Like type what you see, even mistakes. Use brackets for notes.
Yes. NARI has good guidelines. Focus on accuracy and making it usable for searching. But it raises an interesting point.
What's that?
Transcription itself is an act of interpretation, isn't it? Especially with ambiguous handwriting or old language. The choices you make in transcribing shape how that document is understood from the very beginning.
That's true. It's not just typing. Okay, so that leads us into the final phase and some really big picture thinking. Post-visit analysis, critical thinking, ethics, and getting the citations right.
Right. Phase three is making sense of it all after you've left the reading room. First step, get organized.
Which can be daunting if you've gathered a lot of notes and photos.
Absolutely. The sources recommend setting up a system. Could be a spreadsheet. Could be reference management software like Zotero or EndNote. The key is detailed metadata for every single item, linking it directly back to its exact location. Repository, collection, box, folder. You need that trail.
So you can always find the original source of your evidence. Then comes synthesis, pulling it all together.
Yeah, this is where you build your argument or narrative. You're weaving together your own analysis, the evidence you found, making connections.
Showing how different sources maybe confirm each other or maybe contradict each other.
Or how they build on each other to create a more complex picture. And what's really distinctive about archival synthesis compared to working with, say, published books.
What's that?
Is that you're often piecing together fragments. Snippets from letters, a memo here, a photo there. It often requires more inference, more connecting the dots, than synthesizing secondary sources where someone else has already done some interpretation.
And because it's raw material, you can't just accept it at face value. Critical engagement is vital.
Absolutely essential. You've got to constantly evaluate, is this document authentic? Is the information in it reliable or credible?
Asking those questions. What kind of document is it? Who was it for? Why was it made? What's not being said here? Does it clash with other things I know or have found?
And always, always thinking about the creator's bias. An interesting point the sources make is about reluctant testimony, information someone gives that goes against their own interest. That can sometimes be particularly credible.
Because why would they say it if it wasn't true and it made them look bad? Makes sense. This ties into the bigger issue of bias and silences in the archives themselves, doesn't it?
Hugely important. Archives are not neutral. They reflect the biases of the people and institutions that created the records and the biases involved in deciding what got kept, what got described, and how.
So silences are the gaps, the voices that weren't recorded or whose records weren't saved.
Exactly. Historically, archives have overwhelmingly preserved the records of people in power, governments, wealthy families, established institutions. The experiences of marginalized groups are often underrepresented or completely absent. Bias operates at every level: creation, selection, description, even our own interpretation.
So if the archive is biased and incomplete, how do you work with that? How do you find the missing stories?
It's challenging. The sources suggest strategies like reading against the grain. Look for clues about marginalized people within the records of the powerful. Look for inconsistencies. Read between the lines. Be creative in where you look and how you interpret.
It requires a really critical mindset. And there are ethical and legal things to navigate, too. Copyright, fair use.
Yes, it can get complicated. Archives have certain rights for preservation and access copies. But your use as a researcher is governed by rules like fair use. Quoting small amounts for scholarship might be okay.
But publishing large chunks or images needs more scrutiny. And permission from the copyright holder, not just the archive.
Correct. And then there's privacy and confidentiality, especially with more recent records involving people who aren't public figures.
These records can contain really sensitive personal stuff.
And you have an ethical duty to protect people's privacy. That might mean anonymizing names or details in your work. You have to weigh the research value against potential harm. Sometimes ethics boards like IRBs get involved if you're dealing with sensitive data about living people.
Okay, last piece of the puzzle. Citing your sources, giving credit where it's due, and letting others find what you found.
Absolutely crucial for transparency and scholarship. Archival citations look a bit different because you're citing unique items, not mass-produced books. But the core elements are consistent across styles like Chicago, MLA, APA.
You need the creator, the item description or title, the date, the collection name, the specific box and folder numbers.
The name and location of the archive, the repository, and a URL if it was a digital source.
The goal is always retrievability, right? Someone else should be able to use your citation to find that exact same piece of paper or file.
That's the acid test. Can someone else follow your breadcrumbs back to the source?
Wow. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground. From understanding what makes archival materials unique, to the different kinds of archives and materials, the practical steps of planning, searching, handling, documenting,
all the way through to the critical analysis, wrestling with bias and silence, navigating ethics, and finally, citing your discoveries accurately.
It really does sound like detective work sometimes. Patience, attention to detail, but also that thrill of discovery when you find something illuminating.
It is. But it's more than just finding cool documents. It's about critical thinking, ethical responsibility, understanding context, interpretation, acknowledging what's missing as much as what's present.
And it feels relevant even if you're not formally researching history. Understanding how we know what we know about the past, how evidence is interpreted, that's valuable anywhere.
Absolutely. So maybe a final thought to leave you with, drawing on what we've discussed. Archives preserve memory, yes, but they're also shaped by forgetting, by silences, by power. So the question becomes, what histories are still waiting in those boxes, maybe overlooked or hidden in plain sight? Whose stories haven't yet been told, waiting for someone to find them and perhaps read them against the grain to bring a different past into view?